I'm Tiffany Shepis, and before we get into the episode, I want to tell you about Fangoria magazine. With your subscription, you'll get a new Fangoria sent straight to your door every quarter. Once you open up that envelope, you'll find that Fango is now a beautiful, deluxe, 100-page deep dive into every aspect of horror that you love. Each issue includes set visits from the latest movies, your favorite classics, and the insight you've come to expect from the world's best horror and cult film magazine. And you'll never find these articles online. It's analog, print only. Go to Fangoria.com and use promo code Friday for 15% off your first year of Fango. And I want to tell you about our friends at Fright Rags. Fright Rags is the premier place for horror apparel and accessories from your favorite creature features, slasher flicks, and cult classics. Now in their 16th year, Fright Rags has officially licensed products for over 50 films, releasing new collections every single week featuring artwork from top industry professionals. Professionally screen printed on super soft ring spun cotton shirts. Listeners get 10% off your first order. Head on over to Fright Rags and enter code FRIDAY10 at checkout to activate your discount. That's fright-rags.com.
Fangoria presents Casualty Friday.
Hey guys, welcome to Casualty Friday on the Fangoria Podcast Network. Grab your beer and some snacks. And today we have an amazing guest, someone I love dearly, a good friend of mine. She's just an incredible person and talent. Welcome, Christina Lise.
Yeah. Thank you.
I'm Phyllis Rose.
I'm Kane Hodder.
And I'm Tiffany Shepis.
And today's topic is to remake or not to remake.
Ooh, hot topic here hot for topic. A Child's Play 2 star. But you started as a child. I mean, you were a teenager in Child's Play 2, right?
And I was 24.
What?
Yeah, I didn't start acting until I was like 22 years old. I didn't even want to be.
Wait, you were like the moody, chain-smoking Kyle as a 24-year-old?
Yeah.
To me, I don't know if you guys remember, but like I was a huge fan. I thought you were like
I played 17. I played 17 for like a decade.
Holy crap. Wow. You still could play 17. Yeah, good job.
No, that ship
good,
is sailed.
Good work. Good work, that painting in the closet yourself. 24 years old, and that wasn't your first movie, or was it?
No, I actually did a tiny part in a... what's her name from Beaches? Not Bette
Midler.
No. Barbara Hershey.
Yes, a Barbara Hershey movie with Sam Shepard, a little part in it before that. But
just like our other, like just like Danielle Harris, like these are huge movies to be your first films.
If you look at the beginning of my resume, it starts off like fucking gangbusters. I can swear, right?
Yeah.
it's like, and with a classy projects. I did another film called Boiling Point with Viggo Mortensen.
Yeah.
Dennis Hopper, directed by the guy that directed, produced Lolita, and he produced all the Stanley Kubrick films, and of which I was a huge fan. The Killing is one of my favorite films of all, top three films of all time. And it was great, 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 great. And then, I don't know, I hit the wall, and that was that.
you called it a comeback recently, so that's okay. But we want to stay on the beginning.
How did you start? What was the first audition for you, the first professional audition?
I don't remember what the first one was. I did a little play in the Valley, and on the last day of the theater that's been torn down up on Ventura, and somebody on the last day said my agent were really like, you should meet my agent, and I did, and she did, and so she took me on, and I began working pretty quickly because I was 24 or 23 and looked 15.
And super cool. And I think like, I mean, at least I remember like watching you, especially in Child's Play 2, and like those of you that are listening and remember like Child's Play 2, she was like the female lead, like carrying around little Alex Vincent fighting off Chucky. Like Kyle, which is a cool name for a chick, like Kyle, like the badass chain smoking moody teenager.
So
it was like
beautiful.
A hero to a lot of kids because you didn't see a lot of characters like that then.
Right.
Which is pretty amazing.
You were very unique. Just yourself. Did you feel as though you, as Christine, you were close to Kyle in character?
Well, there are two kinds of, from my perspective, there's two kinds of actors in the world. There's actors that lose themselves in parts like Meryl Streep, and actors that bring themselves to every part like Jack Nicholson. And without comparing myself to, I'm in the Jack Nicholson tribe. I'm myself in situations people have created for me. So that's. I'm not trained. I'm just sort of intuitive and winging it all the time. And so that's, I'm not talented enough to, I'm not talented enough to lose myself in things. I have to be myself in the roles.
It looked like you did, though. I mean, for that part, for sure.
And well, I'm a fucking badass in real life.
Yes, you are.
I was punk rock in high school, like in 1979. I'm at 14 years old with a dog collar on, like, and people have feathered hair and they're hippies still. And I was like an outsider, a self-imposed outsider from the time I was 14 on. So that's why I got those parts. I got the misunderstood tough girl with a heart of gold.
Were you
part? Forever.
A horror fan going into Child's Play 2? Like, did you know what kind of franchise it was? Like,
I would still not call myself necessarily a huge horror fan. It's not my genre of choice. There were great, great horror films that I love. And of course, when I got the audition, I rented the first one. This is in 1988, 89, though. You had to go to Blockbuster to get a video, and it had to be in stock, and the person didn't have it out for 14 days. Like, you know, you couldn't just, like, dial it up on your computer and watch it on cue. You had to, it was a much more laborious process to do any research on things. So I did watch it, of course, and I'm a huge fan of the first one. I think it's great. I'm a fan of the last two, especially in the whole franchise as well. But,
it's a big franchise. I mean, you guys have all been a part of, like, pretty big franchises. I have not been lucky enough. But, like, have you guys, when it comes to, like, seeing the original one, right? So part one, part two is, like, usually what I call, like, the originals, like the OGs, mm-hmm. versus the new stuff. Like, does the remake make you happy? Does it make you upset? Does it make you go, why are they doing this without the original crew? Like,
it happens so much that I think you get used to it. I looked on my IMDb and I think I've done 22 or 23 sequels.
Whoa.
Movies that have a number after them.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, you know, obviously with the Jason thing, I started in part 7. So that was a lot of stuff to watch. As, you know, you guys said, if you're stepping into a role or into an established film, whether it's a new character or not, you like to watch the previous and get the feel for it, and that's what I did. And I just think that for me, depending on what the franchise is, if they remake it, sometimes it works for me, and a lot of times it doesn't. I mean, the only Friday the 13th movie I've never seen is the most recent one.
Sure.
Because I saw the trailer and thought, ah, man, that's not the Jason I know. Building tunnels and traps and just
he's evolved, like, man. People have to evolve.
Yeah, that's fine. That's not for me. That's all.
My feeling, so many years ago, maybe about a decade ago, I used to really feel like no remakes. I just feel like you need to keep that sacred, original one, pristine, perfectly. I'm not even talking about sequels, just remaking the original.
Right.
It doesn't go anywhere,
70s and 80s.
Remaking Psycho or something.
Did you, exactly. They're so, or Suspiria or whatnot. Yeah. And then someone said to me, they did. Yeah. Exactly. However, someone said to me, and it made a lot of sense, it finally rang a bell, where I clicked and said, you know, I like that idea. Well, now that they remake them, we can shed light to a whole new generation on the original. And that almost justified or made me feel better about seeing a remake. So I'm more comfortable watching them. Some I like more than others, but it's okay. And even with Sleepaway Camp, people say, oh, it's like the last of the Mohicans. We haven't seen a remake with Sleepaway Camp, the last of the early 80s. And perhaps we will. We've been talking about it. I'm not quite sure. But I would like to see it, especially with all the social relevance it has with the bullying and the gender identification. I think it could be a really cool remake today. But what are some of are there remakes that you love more than others? Or, I mean, we can start with yours. I know you have a lot of feelings about your franchise in particular.
So, it's a matter of record that I disapprove of the Child's Play remake.
How come?
Because it's the pre-existing franchise is still alive and well. So why would you compete? Why would you create a competing franchise to compete with a healthy one? It just confuses fans. It also, Don Mancini, who's written them all, created Chucky, has written them all and directed the last handful, is developing a Chucky TV show for Sci-Fi. And this remake could have derailed that. It's also hijacking. It's a fucking bullshit hijacking of Don Mancini's baby. And they could only remake the first one legally because MGM made the first one, so they still had the rights to the first one.
Okay, that's what I was going to ask.
From two on, they can't touch them. So I spoke to a little blog last year before it came out and said I thought it was a fucking bullshit move, and it went, that sort of went viral, and everybody picked it up with increasingly, you know, dramatic, Christina's rages against the remake, you know.
I loved it.
It sounded like I was losing my fucking mind about it, but it's really about loyalty to as an actor, I think we can all agree, you don't come away from many jobs with you don't take actors with you from them. You don't take friends away from many jobs. And there's two jobs in my life that have given me family from it. You know, like the whole China Beach crew has been good to me, 90210 and the Chucky family. And the Chucky family is really a family, and literally and figuratively, in that, you know, Kevin Yeager, who created the Chucky dolls and the Freddy Krueger makeup and the Crypt Keeper, is married in real life to the woman that was the mom in the first Chucky.
No way.
And then Brad Dourif's daughter has been the female lead in the last two of the seven. So and then Alex and I are like real brother and sister. He really feels like my little brother to me.
He's the best.
And Dawn is the parent to all of it. It's very familial, and I feel protective of that. And I feel protective of my own bottom line as well. You know, this remake was really confusing because, one, it confused fans. They thought it was ours too. And are you going to be in it? Are you going to do a cameo in it? And it's not good, nothing to do with us. I didn't even know what way to root for. I didn't know whether rooting for it to succeed or fail was the way to go, because I didn't know which one of those things, how it would impact the decision to move on with the TV show.
Sure.
Like, if it did really well, they're gonna go, fuck it, they can have the torch that, you know, we lost, they did it. Or, oh my god, thank god it did well, there's an enormous appetite for Chucky still, so we should do it. Or if it tanks, so they can tuck, there's no, you know what I mean? So I didn't even know what to root for.
For the fans that don't know, can you walk, or any of us that don't know, can you walk us through how you even got, like, I mean, obviously you went to an audition, but like, what was the process like? Because Kyle's a big part in that franchise. Like, it's she's like, I don't even know if you'd call her, I guess she's a final girl, but she's also a scream queen in the beginning, because like there's a lot of like, what's gonna happen, and you Absolutely. Think that it's Alex's story, but it's a lot of Kyle. Mm-hmm. Like, walk us through how you got that part.
It was just an audition, like, which is terrifying. They're all terrifying. But this is back in the late 80s, remember, where if somebody wanted to be involved in the decision-making on casting, they had to be in the room and watch you audition. Mm-hmm. There was no videotaping of it. There was no way to, you know, immortalize it and then share it with the whole fucking world, so everybody and their uncle can get the 2 cents on whether someone's castable or not. Yeah. I tend to not do well. The more cooks there are making decisions, the less likely I am to get the job. So the old days were better for me, because I do better in a room, and I do better. I'm not a people pleaser. I don't know. I'm not like an Oreo. I'm more of an acquired taste or something. But if people like me, they really like me, but I'm not a really mainstream taste.
Well,
you know, so, oh my God.
Oh, that was our sound engineer, by the way, folks.
Let me just ask you something. Did you see what I did with Felissa and her phone in a movie called Victor Crowley?
Yeah, it went up in the hoo-ha.
Wasn't kind.
You right? don't want to know.
Right up in the hoo-ha.
You don't have the a vagina, but it'll still go up there.
I don't know if that was like, apparently Ernie's not a fan of Child's Play 2. And he was like, I'm just going to interrupt this story. We are sorry about
I know,
that.
I'm riveted. I want to
Yeah,
continue.
So, I mean, but real quickly, like, so for people that don't know, like our listeners that aren't necessarily actors, like you're talking about self-taping versus auditioning. Ooh. Like, back in the day, you have to go into a room and you audition for one person. Now, often you record yourself at home and send it out to the
world.
You
didn't audition for one. You auditioned for anybody that wanted to be involved in deciding. So the directors were always there. The producers were always there. It was like
all
the
head honchos.
4 to 10 people in a room.
Wow.
And nobody who wasn't there could have a say. Now it's even if. It's not even the casting director you meet anymore. You meet the assistant, and they put you on tape, and then that gets put up, uploaded somewhere on the internet, and then everybody gets a fucking password and can, you know, chime in about why you shouldn't be the one to get the job, why I shouldn't be the one to get the job. So I read for that. I didn't get it, and
You didn't get it.
I didn't get it after I didn't cast. I didn't get it from that audition, and then I went away and did a 21 Jump Street, and I came back and was doing an episode of Baywatch, and they were like, we couldn't find the girls, so we're going to bring the girls that were the near misses back. And when I went in, it was a work day on the Baywatch set, and so I went in with a bit of a chip on my shoulder, because it's, you know, nobody wants to hire somebody who smells of desperation. So I had that attitude of, I'm fucking working, so fuck you. And I think that's what gave me the edge. I was like, I can't, you know, we need to hurry this. I have a fucking call time. I need to get out of here. And they were like, oh, and I think that attitude was what put me over the top.
Got
it. Them,
yeah. Well, I mean, that was very much the character in the movie too. It's like, I don't have time for this off. Shit.
Yeah, I don't have time for your shit. Yeah.
And it's like that movie, I was cracking up a couple years ago watching that, and I was seeing like you hand your cigarette to Alex Vincent, like a little baby boy. Like,
I don't hand it to him. I put it, I say, hold this.
I do.
And now he still smokes. It's my fault.
It's all your fault.
Yeah, I know. I never did, but he does.
And it stunted his growth.
Oh, don't say that.
Oh, my
and
Alex.
You've been with Alex really family for many years. The two of you, I know you do the conventions together and you're like brother and sister, mm-hmm. like you said. How was it working with him as a little boy on the set? Was he an easy child?
Yeah.
Yeah. No, he's so sweet. So I imagine.
He always would have been a seasoned pro already, right? Like after doing the first one?
Seven or 8 years old. You're still a baby.
No matter what.
Yeah, a little peanut. And I'm... Wow. I loved him. He's a little boy, and I took care of him. I know that Alex, when we got, I didn't stay in touch with him when he was seven. You know, it'd be creepy. Hey, Alex home?
Does he want to come and play?
You're like,
it's Christine. It's I'm 28 Christine. Years old. Yeah. I have a horrible hangover, but is Alex home? I'd like to talk to him. And there was no internet, and there was no way to stay in touch. So I didn't get back in touch with him probably until like eight years ago or so.
Imagine you outside of school with a balloon.
Right?
Real weird.
I'd be on a registry by now if that had been the case. So, yeah, we didn't stay in touch all in the intervening years. But he said when we got back in touch, he said, you know, I always remember you as the person that was nicest to me on that set. There's a lot going on, you know, it's natural for me to want to take care of a little kid. And that was my job in the movie, too. So
it makes sense.
As for him, I'm sure that his little, you know, immature mind doesn't know the difference. Like in a movie where I'm saving him, in a movie, I'm sure he felt that as a real thing.
Nurturing. Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, your guys' chemistry and that was pretty unbelievable. He's a really good actor, and we all know Alex well, like, and think he's great, you know. But like, you guys in that film is like, it looks like you're really, even though you're not related in the movie, like it looks like you're like the older sister. Like it just it really gels. So whoever cast that, you eight people in that room, and the bitch that didn't show up that made you come back and get the part.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah.
You know what's interesting about the casting process, how it's changed, the auditioning process, is I really never had to do that very much because for so many years it was just stunts. There's no auditioning for stunts. And then by the time I started playing characters, it was because I had some kind of name in horror, so people wanted me in their movie, so they offered me parts. So I never really had to audition that much, but I mentioned this earlier today, and I couldn't think of the name of the show, but one of the times I went in to read for a character was for Renegade with Lorenzo Lamas. Yeah. And I went in, I think, where was it? Paramount? And I don't know. And there were people in the room still then. And I, you know, read for, auditioned, whatever you want to call it. And as I was walking out of the room, I heard somebody say under the breath, yeah, that was intimidating.
Oh, like,
and rude? Like, because I was supposed to be, this is the one where I did the fight scene with my shirt off, so the scars would show, and they wanted somebody that was intimidating because it was taking place in prison. Mm-hmm. And I heard somebody say that, and I said, excuse me? And he
said, were they being sarcastic?
No.
He was being serious?
No, he was being serious.
Wait.
And I said, what was that? And he said, I just didn't think it was intimidating. I said, hey, how about if you go fuck yourself? And part of it was kind of continuing the audition, but I was also pissed off that you would say something like that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Fucking let me leave the room and then say your comments.
Sure.
Don't do it so I can hear it.
Right. Yeah.
So I kind of went towards him and got a little fucked off about it and then left. And I said, well, obviously I'm not getting that. I got it.
Yeah.
Because of that. And then they asked me to do the fight scene with Lorenzo with my shirt off because the scars were more intimidating and stuff. But if I had not said anything.
Yeah. Right. Had it been on tape, you wouldn't have had a chance to yeah. Right. I have a story just like that where I read for a show called The Strip with Sean Patrick Flannery. And I did the audition when there were still people in the room. And one of the guys at the table, okay, he was falling asleep when I finished the reading. And I stood up and they're like, okay, great, thank you. I'm like, well, look at you, you're falling asleep. I hope I didn't do that. I hope that's not my fucking performance. And he was like, oh, that's the attitude we want. Do it again with that attitude. And I got the job. So,
There's no human connection when you're on tape, right? I mean, you're there by yourself. Like, you don't get any feedback. Right. Like, you should be able to read a room if somebody's not into it or they are into it, or redirection.
See, I have to say, I feel the opposite. What? When I was coming up in New York in the late 80s, and I would audition for shows like Charles in Charge and Give Me a Break. They called me in for Give Me a Break. They were like, we want that girl from Sleepaway Camp. And I went in and I was so ridiculous. I was wearing, she was the young child. I forget who played the part, Laura someone. And I had a baseball cap. I look ridiculous. I was not the athletic type. It was I'm going to look like that little tomboy with the crooked head. I probably had like red lipstick on as well. And I walked in, and as soon as I would be in front of people in the room, I would, and I'm not generally like this. The three of you know me. I love to talk to people and I'm outgoing. I would just clam up. I would just stop. So for me, being on tape is better because I could do it over and over and over until I figure out the timing and I'm ready and I can click into it. In person, it was like, oh, a room full of people and I have to now act? What the, don't you just like my baseball hat and my bat? And, you know,
see, I sucked. I go the other way with self-tapes, where I will do it so much that then it's bad and it lost what I could have had if I just had two shots in a room with casting people that had like a thing.
And gave you direction.
By the end, I am flat. Like, it's flat. It's not good. And then I'm like, well, fuck it. I'm tired of doing this. I'm just send it. And I don't get the job. But I go into a room, I generally will get at least a call back to producers or something.
I get nervous. I'm scary.
I'm a terrified auditioner. This building is an audition type of building.
Yes, it is.
Butterflies in the elevator.
This looks exactly like all of the places we'd go in Manhattan. Okay, it's the agent called. You have to be there 2:00. It's like, they take a Polaroid of you, which generally looks like shit. And you have to sign in and you're in the room with everyone else. Polaroid. I'm 112. You know that. And they had it at your sketch.
Stone carving.
Yeah, they had a chisel. It sucks. It's just the worst thing. That's why it's so nice to be in this genre. And you do, you know people, you know directors. And
they mostly know your work. And so it's not like you're having to audition as much. But like, we're talking about the remake side of things. And I know that you obviously just told us you weren't excited about the remake. Did you see?
No.
You didn't see it at all?
No, of course not.
Good. Because I support you. I didn't see it either.
Yeah, I didn't see it either.
Nor I.
Oh, look at that.
Thank you.
Fangoria Podcast Network. We watch nothing. Have there been remakes that you guys were involved in, that you wanted to be involved in, that you thought were like, man, this is going to be great. This is going to be better than the original.
I've never been in a remake. I've only been, like I said, in sequels. However, I would really like to see Sleepaway Camp remade, and I will definitely have my hand in that as a producer, possibly as an actor. I always say I want to play Aunt Martha. So we'll see about that. And I do think it's time that film gets made, so I am all for that.
Do you think, I mean, obviously you don't know if you're not writing it, but like the Angela part would be a young
child. It will be a young person, absolutely. And it will probably have some of, like I said, the same social commentary, but it will be more contemporary.
Mm-hmm. Have you been in?
I don't think so. Just numerous sequels, but nothing comes to mind that was actually a remake. I was almost going to do the Nightmare on Elm Street one. What's his name?
You're Freddy Krueger.
No. They had briefly talked about me doing that, but I didn't.
But you playing who?
Just a character.
Oh, just a character in it. Like, oh, just kind of, that'd be a cool, like.
I know. That would have been cool.
See you like as like the, like Lin Shaye character, like, where's your pass? Like, would have been hilarious.
Yeah. You know? And, you know, because Robert and I have known each other since V.
Mm-hmm. I love V.
Before either one of us played our characters.
Played your famous characters.
Wasn't Jeff Yeager in V? Jeff Yeager, Kevin Yeager's brother, Jeff?
I think he was.
I think he left Juilliard to do it, as a matter of fact.
Wow. Yeah. in Juilliard. I did a remake. Well, yes, I did the Night of the Demons remake, a tiny part. And it was kind of like when Danielle was here on our show, she was talking about getting Danielle Harris on, and she was talking about getting a part in a movie and just kind of saying, like, I'll do anything on this. And that's how I was. I was such a big fan of the original Night of the Demons, Kevin Tenney's with Linnea Quigley.
Amelia Kincaid, who's one of my very dear friends.
And I was like, I will do anything. I was like, but really, you should let me play Angela. I was like, I'll do anything on this movie, but this is what you should let me do, because this is the part I was born to fucking play. And I talked to everyone in that production. And at the end of the day, they're like, it was sort of like the list we talked about, the worthiness of actors. And I wasn't on that list. And they were like, but we want you in it. And so you can play Angela's like sidekick. And I was like, fuck yes.
And
like,
you
it was
looked like fierce, man. Winning, you winning so the lotto good.
To me to be part of that Absolutely. Franchise. And I thought it was a really well done remake, like for remakes. But I don't share the, like, oh man, like these remake, you know, the original movie's so coveted that you can't touch it. I mean, there are a few like The Exorcist or Psycho or Jaws that like I think it would take a really spectacular person to be sure. able to conquer it. But I think, like you said, like, I mean, my sister many years ago, she's much younger than me, watched the remake of Texas Chainsaw Massacre and was like, this movie is amazing, which I actually thought the remake was amazing. I thought it was super fun. But when I was like, well, did you ever see the original? And she was like, what are you talking about? Like original.
What
like,
original.
Yeah, what oh, original.
Wow.
And so I think those are things that, like, why would they know? Right? Like, I mean,
come on.
Not.
I knew who Elvis Presley was when I was. It's like,
well, I mean, in fairness, my sister's a fucking idiot. But, yeah, but
she must be.
They didn't know.
It's like saying Halloween. What?
Hey, but your kids are super fans. And they've grown up in
but
this. My
Texas
sister
Texas Chainsaw
didn't.
Massacre is one of the, I mean, I cite it always in every interview. It's my, the original is my favorite. I do like the remake. I think it is great and fun. However, I imagine everyone knows Friday the 13th, Halloween, Exorcist, Texas
don't.
Chainsaw Massacre. There's just movies that we all know.
If they're kids who are just growing up and they're not, they have no tie to the genre at all, and they're just kids discovering stuff on Netflix. Like,
how?
They
but she's not 10.
I think kids have a very shallow sense of history nowadays. Like, I was growing up watching Humphrey Bogart movies, and I don't think that's how it works anymore.
In my but also, they have do. A ton more choices
they
now
do.
Too than
yeah,
we
had
all
three
did.
Channels
it was three channels
and
a handful at you know or a video store maybe yeah. with five horror films in the horror section.
Yeah.
Now there's a thousand yeah. like on Netflix, Hulu, like
and
everything.
Not to mention all the independent stuff that's on YouTube and Vimeo and all the other stuff. Mm-hmm. It's like it's a tidal wave of content.
So mm-hmm. I think like it sometimes it takes those to shine light on these past films.
I have always said that my all-time favorite film is The Exorcist.
It's a great movie.
It's and my favorite horror film for sure.
It's scary.
It's my all-time favorite yeah. film overall, and I think I'd be interested in seeing a remake.
They couldn't never make it as gritty as that one was. They would never get away with like let Jesus that you know that cross
yeah,
thing.
That's
and,
true.
You know,
yeah,
and the face, the blood, putting her mother's. Face
I
in
think
a bloody
they could
crotch. Like, that's
get away crazy. With it. It would just take some ballsy actors, and you'd have to have
a
grown
ballsy
up kid
studio. And I don't think studios.
I don't think anyone does
anymore.
It anymore. And I think that's what we're talking about with remakes. We're not seeing them. They're so glossed over. And who's starring in them? That's not how they were made in the 70s and 80s. Kids, Danielle and I were talking about. We were killing people. I killed how many kids in Sleepaway Camp? I was a kid. I was 13. No one watched over my shoulder and said, "Ooh, I had full nudity as a male in that movie." You can't do that today. So the remakes look so different. Even the way they're filmed, that we were on 35mm, mm-hmm. and you and I have discussed that, how much we love the beauty of film,
sure.
actual film.
But I mean, there are some films that, you know, maybe could have used the enhancement of some special effects and didn't have the money back then to do it. Or, you know, maybe movies that we thought were great and like they just didn't have the money or the budget to have great enough actors. And you're like, well, shit, like it really could stand a revamp with somebody better. You know, I don't know. I think there's room for it. The Exorcist, just you saying that right now made me go, well, fuck, I think I'd be curious to see it too. I don't think
so
it could be done, but I'd be curious to see it.
Depending on the actress and,
I mean. It can't be done better.
Has
I don't
there
think it could be done better.
I think
has
special
anyone
effects
talked
in it,
about
they don't, they hold up, they don't look pinky.
That's what's so amazing about the movie. It still holds up.
And you don't go, oh, look at that horrible trick they pulled. it holds up, like all the stunts in it and special effects in it work.
Sure.
Yeah.
It's really early. Still super. I mean, it's that with Poltergeist too. Two movies that still, like, when we show, well, I haven't shown Mia the Exorcist, but like watching that, I'm still creeped out. And I'm like, oh, like I feel like unsettled. Like, there's not a lot of modern movies that will do that to me. I mean, maybe Midsommar.
And speaking of, it's not a remake, but it is a reboot. And we have you here, and I would like to talk about Beverly Hills 90210.
Okay. But I was going to say, I don't think I have any remakes on my resume, but I do. I have Abel Ferrara's Body Snatchers, which is one of
those made like eight times.
That's right.
So I have that, which I think I'm a bigger fan of it now than I was when it first came out. That special effects I thought were underwhelming at the time. Now, I don't agree anymore. I think that with myself anymore, I think now I'm really proud of that film.
Did you get any fan backlash for doing a remake?
No.
No.
There was no internet back then.
It doesn't matter.
No. And it's been done so many. It was the third remake at that point, second remake at that point. So there's the 50s one, the Donald Sutherland one, and then ours. And then there's been like six of them since, I think. There's a Nicole Kidman one.
So they're just like, one more.
But this one, I don't know if you've ever seen it. It's actually, you should. It's genuinely creepy. And bizarrely, I did A League of Their Own, the TV show, and played Lori Petty's character. I played Lori Petty on TV. I'm not Lori Petty, but I played her on TV.
That's
hilarious.
So that's sort of a, I don't know, is that
a remake?
It's a TV version of a movie.
Yeah, it's somewhat of a remake. Yeah. So well, you're like then the remake queen.
No,
as far as all of us are concerned, we have no remakes.
No remakes.
One remake and three?
No, two.
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 Well.
Well, then
nine, three.
No, I consider that, you know, we're reimagining it now. And what does that feel like? How many years later? Is it 20 since we first watched?
25 years since, 25 years for me, yeah. Feels fucking great.
A job
I had to audition for with, actually, and the audition for this one, I got this job because when I saw the trailer thing on like February 23rd or 27th or whatever, coincidentally, the day that Luke Perry had a stroke, was the day they announced the new show. It was a really weird coincidence.
Yeah.
Wow.
I was like, I got goosebumps from that thing. I was like, I can't believe I'm feeling sentimental about that show. I didn't think I cared. And I was like, you know, I can't take the chance that they won't reach out to me. I can't wait for them. I have to. So I Googled who the producers were and I friended them on Facebook, and within half an hour, they'd both responded and say, oh, we're going to take you for drinks or for lunch tomorrow and have a talk. And so I went. And they're like, here's what we're going to do. And here's all the other actors. They're all pitching. It's a full reality show. And so it's a scripted. It's all scripted, but it's a pretend reality show. And everyone's pitched what they want their characters to be doing. They'll be playing themselves by their own name, but with fictional lives. And do you want to do an episode? And I was like, yeah, I want to do all fucking six of them. I'll do whatever. I'll do anything. Give me anything, you know?
Yeah.
Like, okay, well, what would you want to do? And I had to take the course of the lunch to figure out what I wanted to pitch myself as, because I lived with Jason Priestley for 5 years. And so I was afraid.
Wait, in real life?
Yeah. So I was trepidatious about having my storyline tied to him for a number of reasons. One, super limiting. Two, it relegates me to either girlfriend or ex-girlfriend status, which is incredibly not interesting. Also, his wife is one of my very, very best friends. In fact, I'm throwing a birthday party for her at my house tonight. Today.
Oh my God.
His wife's one of my best friends. So that's another weird element. I just didn't want to be, and I didn't want them to have any opportunity to pit even his fictional wife against me. Didn't want to contribute at all to that sort of toxic girl hates girl thing. It's so prevalent in all the entertainment world. So at the end, I pitched that I was, like I said, the funniest people in every show are like the Megan Mullally in Will and Grace, and the mother on Arrested Development, and the mother on Two and a Half Men. These sort of booze coozes with the fucking martini in the hand, who's just got a little bit of the filter taken off of what she says and how she perceives things. And that I had a vendetta against everybody from the show for real or perceived slights. I just wanted to fucking take them all down. Which, that they're like, oh, ha, 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 that sounds great. And then they came up with having me be the head of the network that's overseeing the
reboot. You came up basically with your character, but they came up with the
story to
the
fit her
story.
In.
Yeah. Wow.
Wow.
That's pretty amazing.
Yeah. How brilliant to be involved. And you're so great on it.
Thank you.
And just, you know, watching that show again, it's, for me, it's so sentimental because I watched it 25 years ago, and it's one of the biggest television series we've had. So to see it all over again is wonderful. And I'm sure when you were reunited with
especially in a different light.
Sure. Right? Yeah. In a different light.
Yes. Yeah. Totally. You.
Everybody's themselves.
Yes.
That's amazing. And were when you were finally like when you met with them, did you know it was like a sealed deal, or was there still that like I've got to hold off until I'm on set before I get excited about this?
I didn't get the job until the very very end of May, and that meeting was like end of February.
Oh wow!
So I waited all that time, and so Jason and I were doing this weird game of pretending we didn't know what was going on. Jason's a producer on the thing, so any decisions they made, of course he was going to be involved. Yeah. And I'd see him all the time. With their house for the, you know, whatever. His wife teaches spinning and we're all spinning together. I'm at their house all the time. He's at my house all the time. His kids think I'm an aunt. And we never once brought up that this show was even happening to each other.
That's hard.
Really weird. Yeah. Both of us like, oh, there's nothing happening. And I don't really know what that was about.
It was like a jinx
thing. I'd be like, tell me right now. I'd have him tied to the toilet. Like, if you don't tell me right now, what? Why didn't you bring it up? What? You just, it was too much for the friendship.
Like, I don't know why he didn't. I know that I didn't want anyone to have a chance to say no to me. I didn't want anyone to go, maybe this wouldn't be a good idea. Whether that would be me or anybody else in the cast, for whatever they might think that Jason and I would have some drama on the set, which of course we don't and didn't. But I don't know. I just didn't want to jinx it. I also don't want to ask him for any favors. That's just not how I roll. So I wanted to have gotten it without him, without asking him for anything.
And did you discuss it afterwards once you were on set? Like, did you know this whole time? No. Did he know the whole time?
He had to have. And I'm sure that I'm certain that they asked him whether or not he was okay with my being there too before they gave me the job.
I mean that's unbelievable, and like a lot of people, I mean, you see it online all over the place how excited people were to have a 90210 reboot. Are there any other shows or movies that you guys are like, I mean, obviously we talk about the ones we don't want, like the coveted three, right? Like, you know, The Exorcist, The Shining would be hard, Jaws would be hard.
Yes.
What do we think could have one or deserves one or you want to see more of that ended?
I really can't think of any that I'm so excited about. I'm not really quite sure.
Well, before we started this episode, Felissa told me that she always wanted to see a reboot of Blazing Saddles.
Blazing Saddles.
That would be never. Just,
I know how much you love Blazing Saddles.
Riveting.
That's also secret. You can't fuck with Blazing Saddles.
It is.
You what?
You can't. You can't fuck with Blazing Saddles.
No,
that's
definitely
secret too.
Not.
I heard there's a Three Amigos remake in the works.
Is that right?
I did. I read that.
There's
somewhere.
A Golden Girls reboot. They're doing Golden Girls with Cyndi Lauper.
Cyndi Lauper. I saw that. Was that a real thing?
I think it is.
And who? Jane Lynch.
Jane Lynch. That's interesting.
Wow.
I don't know who the third person will be, but
I mean, there.
Four
I think there's certain television that I would like to see. TV. I love Cheers. It would just be fun to see something new with Cheers. There's certain TV I'd like to see again.
Isn't it more fun to see something totally different that hasn't done?
It is. I think a lot of the new stuff I don't watch a lot of television, but the ones I love, I think I just want to continue to watch over and over.
I think I would like to see a redo of Cheers.
I love Cheers.
I really do. Cheers. I think it would be a lot.
But I mean, but you kind of have to use
we're
the same
play,
people.
We're going
to
play.
Yes. No.
You'd have to. There's no way anyone's going to be accepting of somebody other than Ted Danson behind
them. We'll play Lilith and Frasier.
I'm not sure any of those people will be fine with it.
Frasier.
But are those people like going to care about a bunch of old, you know?
Funny you're saying that, because I want to say one of the great things about this 90210 reboot is that there's four women over the age of 45 that are the leads on it.
Amazing.
Five women over the age of 45. I'm 54. I'm 54. Gabrielle's going to be, she's 58.
Wow.
And all these chicks on there, like looking fab.
Looking hot, carrying a TV show.
Yeah, and the men too. I mean, the older men get to work more than older women. Sure. And the women are all producers as well. And it was always Tori and Jenny that created the show. So it's just a girl power world over there, which I think is great.
And with your character, you play such a wonderful, powerful female role, and that's great to see. So.
Power lesbian, head of Fox.
Isn't
that's
that
amazing.
Fantastic?
Did you want to have that personality thing? The
sexuality?
Yeah, the sexuality
choice.
That
was Gabby's choice. Gabrielle wanted that story for her character, and it just worked to tie me into that storyline, which I'm all about because it gives me a whole web of, you know, layers and nuance and things to do, you know?
Yeah.
I think I also...
And you're in a relationship, sorry, with Gabriella on the show.
I sleep with her. I don't have a relationship with her.
Look at that. I love that.
I have a one-night stand with
her. Forget the relationship. Yeah. Just do the deed.
But the thing is, my character in the original show was an outsider, and sort of, and I've been told, and there's been articles written about how Emily Valentine is a lesbian icon, because anybody that felt other than or not spoken for by those pretty eight original cast members, I was the first new-looking person that came on the show. I was the only one that had any edge or was remotely out. And I was treated like an outsider and ultimately, you know, landed the good boyfriend, which every outsider girl, I think, dreams of, that they're going to get their Brad Pitt or something. But everybody who felt like other than, whether they felt other than because they were gay kids or punk rock kids or poorer than their community or a different religion than their community, when my character showed up, everyone was like, that's me. That's that kid. And then she held that place for all those people. So I feel like it's a natural progression. I like the evolution of that character now being still standing up for a community that's underrepresented and misunderstood. So I think that's I think it's a noble thing. I think it's a privilege to do it.
Absolutely. I mean, and anybody, I mean, we talk about that all the time, like especially doing like the horror conventions and stuff like that, you often find, and maybe it's just any convention, but we run into people that feel put out. They feel on the outside. Yeah. They feel like they didn't belong, right? Like,
yeah, definitely.
And then it's like fucking the movie. Like, we are the weirdos, right? Like, we're like that family for them. And so the fact that you're able to.
Well, I'm a weirdo too. I really always have genuinely been. I mean, I wouldn't use the word weirdo, but it's the best shorthand for this conversation. So
it's amazing.
I've gotten so much good response from the documentary about the bullying that I went through when I was young. So many people identify with that part of my life and come up, you know, crying and stuff, saying you really helped me through some difficult times, just knowing that I wasn't the only one going through this. So, it's similar in that when people can identify with what you're doing, that it really helps them, you know, deal with difficult problems.
Yeah. And I think the fact that in the case of Emily Valentine, that character that she dated, she had a date, got a date with Luke Perry, with Dylan, and then also was like boyfriend, girlfriend with Brandon on the show. That's like, that means that the outsider girl can get the insider boy, which is a fantasy thing, you know, to be accepted on that level by those people. I think because ultimately my character was embraced by and then rejected, subsequently rejected by those people. But the embracing was the most important part, I think, for anybody that felt other than when they were watching that show. So,
and we both played that. I was Angela, who was bullied severely in Sleepaway Camp, and I take that character very seriously. And I feel as though when I'm at conventions and I speak with people, and I'm so lucky to connect, as we all are, with them, because they'll cry at my table and say, I felt like I really understood Angela, and thank you for playing that. And we take these roles very seriously. Mm-hmm. So it's an honor and a privilege to be in these shoes, definitely.
Yeah, and for everyone bullied, you have to have the bullies in the movies.
Yeah, right? Yeah.
To pick on the little people. Yeah. And then you can kill us, and you can tag, you just kill me for that on this episode.
So you see, on this episode now, Christine, we can take up a weapon, and you and I can kill.
Cathartically.
Well, would you like to join in? Because you were bullied.
Killing.
So we're going to kill Tiffany today.
I don't want to kill anybody.
At the end of every episode here on Casualty Friday,
she's much nicer. Don't rope her into this nonsense.
Excuse me, are you joining
Christina
me?
Christina
Lee
is a saintly,
get the wrench.
Nice
Thank
woman.
You so much.
Put a wrench in the works.
And
I'm just going to keep
talking. We will say, Shepis is dead. Shepis is
dead. Do it one time on your head.
No, can I punch you right in the nuts?
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Casualty Friday on the Fangoria Podcast Network.
Casualty Friday is a Fangoria Podcast Network original, hosted and produced by Tiffany Shepis, Felissa Rose, and Kane Hodder. Executive producers Dallas Sonier, Phil Nobile Jr., Matt Mangerides, and Justin Martell. produced by Natasha Pesetta, associate producer Jessica Safa-Vamer, art and design by Jason Koslerich, sound recording and mixing by Ernesto Hurtado at Rebel Talk Network in Los Angeles, music by John Brennan. For Fangoria, Brandon Wynardi, Rachel Wilson, Brandon Jones, Rob Galuzzo, James Wallace, Monique Jacques, and Anthony Bonds.